Welcome to the PBL Playbook, brought to you by Magnify Learning, where we put teachers back in their sweet spot. This podcast will give you the playbook of real PBL facilitators in the classroom just like you. Now here's the PBL Playbook with Josh and Andrea.
Hey, welcome back to the PBL Playbook. We cannot tell you how excited we are that we get to share our passion with all of you.
Before we dive into our episode for this month, we want to give a shout out to all of our listeners who helped us have a successful podcast launch.
We're so amped that not only do we get to talk about PBL, but that there are people out there who actually want to listen to what we have to say. We really appreciate all the feedback that we've already received, and we hope we can get a few more people to give us feedback.
As a reminder, if you have some feedback or questions, or you just want to talk about a different topic in a future episode, you can reach us on Twitter at Magnify Learning, at Ask Geebs for Josh, or me at MissB103.
If you're on Twitter, make sure you use the hashtag PBL Playbook or email our podcast at PBLPlaybook@MagnifyLearningIN.org. We'd love to hear feedback, and we definitely want to know what you want to hear on our podcast.
All right, so our last episode, we had a chance to talk to some PBL students and a parent of children who have attended PBL schools. In that episode, we asked our guests what makes PBL work. Today, we're going to keep going to find the answers to that question by talking to two educators who have had some experience in PBL.
Our first interview features Coleman Marshall, a middle school teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. Our second interview features Dr. Jose Martinez, a professor of education at Franklin College in Indiana.
Both of our guests talk about employability or 21st century skills. At Magnify Learning, we like to use the framework established by P21, which is the Partnership for 21st Century Learning. Their framework is pretty extensive, but some examples of these skills are critical thinking and problem solving, communication, collaboration, adaptability, and accountability, which are skills that go beyond the content and allow our students to prepare for today's workplace.
For the entire framework, be sure to check out our show notes for a link to the P21 website.
Both of our guests have a lot of PBL experience and have some great answers to our question, what makes PBL work? In this episode, we're going to also introduce the PBL timeout. At any point during these interviews, Josh or I can call a PBL timeout.
During these timeouts, we'll share some tips, ask questions, and dive a bit deeper into the conversation.
All right, Josh, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's get this episode started. Coleman Marshall, who teaches social studies at the STEAM Academy in Lexington, Kentucky. Coleman, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Thanks for being with us today. So just a little bit of background for our listeners. How long have you been a PBL facilitator?
I've been facilitating PBL roughly about 5 years now.
Awesome. So how do you know that PBL is working for your students?
Yeah, so, you know, just like any other sort of, you know, when you went through education, getting your degree and going through school, you talk about assessments, formative, summative assessments. And so there are multiple ways to know that PBL is working. And very traditionally, formative and summative assessments tell you whether PBL is working. That's just one of the ways that I know PBL is working for my students. The other way I know PBL is working for my students is through them actually talking about the project outside of class. When I'm walking through the hallways or I get an email from a parent telling me their child is talking about the project that they're working on at home, I know that PBL is working. So you have the very traditional way that we assess students, whether that's formatively or summatively. But if you just go to the students as well, I think they will tell you, at least I have found that they will tell you that it's working.
Thanks, Coleman. Anyone who's been doing PBL in their classroom can attest to having projects that have gone great and those that have completely flopped. In your experience, what elements are non-negotiable in designing and managing a project?
So the biggest thing for me, one of the biggest things for me is flexibility. That I see flexibility as we talk in the PBL world about these employability skills, or some people refer to them as 21st century skills. But flexibility to me when creating a project or within the middle of a project, knowing that, hey, things aren't going so well, we might need to readjust course here. And that's a life lesson that I think it's important for our students to learn, because they need to realize even the best set plans don't always go perfect. In fact, I've had projects that run very smoothly, as you said, and I've had projects that have gone absolutely off the map and not gone where I expected them to go. But I think it's important for the students to know that, you know what, you're going to make mistakes. Your plans don't always go as you hope for them to go. And so, therefore, being able to be flexible and to adjust and to kind of reevaluate where you are and make the corrections is a skill that any employer in this country, I think, would want from one of their employees. So that's one of my major non-negotiables whenever it's really a mindset, I would say, that when I'm going into a project, it's flexibility, knowing that I have structure, I've organized it, but I'm also flexible enough to know that when things are going well, all right, keep the course, but when things aren't going as planned, how can I alter it? How can I get us back on course?
At the end of a project, when you're reflecting and looking back, how do you know that a project has been successful versus maybe a project that hasn't been so successful?
Sure. So for me, of course, you got to look at the grading aspect of it, but I don't think that is solely the deciding factor that makes one project more successful than the other. But I mean, you have to remember, at the end of the day, we're here to educate our students, and we want to make sure they are learning and they're not just doing some project that's fun.
PBL timeout. Boom. I just think we found our episode title.
Here to educate.
What a great title, because one of the biggest PBL myths is that PBL isn't rigorous with the content, but that's simply not true. Effective PBL instructors like Coleman know that successful projects begin with the standards.
And I think there are a lot of ways that we can make our projects rigorous with content, with standards, and with those employability skills and educating our students, because that is what we're here to do, like Coleman said.
But the one thing that maybe sets a successful project apart from a project that maybe didn't go as well as planned, for me, is the authenticity. Are the kids talking about that project 2-3 weeks from now? Are the communications or are the discussions that we're having in class, are they positive, or do they tend to lean a little bit more towards the negative side? Again, using the students as kind of my feelers and understanding that dynamic has really helped me. But again, also, I would say community partners as well, talking to them at the end of a project as well and judging from their perspective, you know, did they feel like they were involved enough? Were they involved too little?
PBL timeout.
We talked so much in episode 1 about the importance of reflection, and here it is again. The idea of using a community partner as part of your reflection process is huge. There's nothing better than a community partner who provides feedback on student presentations, but also gives us ideas on how to incorporate those employability skills into a project.
Community partners are such a big part of PBL, so we plan to have an entire episode dedicated to community partners in the near future. Keep an ear out for more updates on that episode.
You know, there are so many things that go into a project, whether it's successful or not. But, you know, that's the thing I've tried to keep in my mindset, is that even when I run a great project, I want to think, how can I improve that so that next year it's an even better project?
Thank you so much for the time that you gave us today. We look forward to talking to you again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And that wraps up our interview with Coleman Marshall. We'll now transition to our interview with Jose Martinez. Today, we are fortunate to be joined by Dr. Jose Martinez from Franklin College in Indiana. Dr. Martinez is an associate professor in the education department at Franklin and a former PBL facilitator. Dr. Martinez, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you for having me on your podcast here to talk about project-based learning, which is something I have a huge passion for. My experience actually kind of started as a teacher. I was when I was doing teacher education, I'm from Napa, California, and when I got into my student teaching assignments, one of them was to be a student teacher at Napa New Tech. And at first I was like, oh no, I don't want to do that. I want to be a traditional high school teacher at the high school that I went to. But once I got there, it was a whole other experience, and it really just like sparked this whole passion of technology and PBL and just the world of difference that this type of instruction can do for students. And ever since that moment, I've kind of not stopped having project-based learning be my passion. And that led me through working at multiple New Tech schools. And my adventure has taken me across the country to Indiana, where I received a doctorate in education studies, where I studied project-based learning implementation as it relates to college readiness. So short introduction, but that's kind of a little bit of background on me. But right now I'm teaching education methods at Franklin College for pre-service teachers.
Great. Again, we are so glad to have you here with us today. To get us started, why don't you talk a little bit more about your research? I know that you studied the effects of PBL on students' perceptions of college readiness. I think this is a topic that our listeners will be very interested in. So what did you find out?
Yeah, so I looked at a college readiness model that's really used often by both scholars of qualitative, quantitative, and through a lot of organizations that implement PBL, they use this model as well. It's called the College Readiness Dimensions by Connolly. And the biggest publication you'll probably find is was published in 2012. But it looks at college readiness through the four dimensions: key cognitive skills, key content knowledge, key academic behaviors, and then there's key contextual skills. So they all measure something very different. Where traditional, you know, measurements of college readiness are just standardized tests, this looks at it, you know, both academically but also holistically. And so what I did was I interviewed alumni from a project-based learning high school, and the criteria for them to qualify for my study was that they're attending a four-year institution. So it had to be a university or college. So I didn't interview anyone that was in a community college or had gone straight into the workforce. It was just looking at college readiness at top levels. So I had I interviewed 12 people for my study. I reached saturation, so I capped it at 10, but I asked some questions about project-based learning and the structure, of course, other elements, including technology and areas of student democracy in the classroom, which is a huge component of PBL. And one of the major findings I found was once they arrived at college, a lot of the students who go through PBL thrive in dimensions of key context skills and key cognitive skills. And that cognitive skill is important because it really reflects a lot of the instructional models of PBL that promote student choice, promotes critical thinking, promotes problem solving. And they really were telling me, the alumni were telling me how easy that stuff was for them in college. And some of the questions that I still have revolve around the dimension of key academic behaviors. Some of the things that they were interested in is learning more about study skills and whatnot. But I found out that most of that had to do with majors. If they were in a major that was more traditional, not really career-focused, but more like knowledge-based, in terms of like very traditional, like something like philosophy or another liberal art that was very individual-based, they struggled with some concepts, but What they struggled with was interesting that I found was anytime a student who graduated from a PBL experience in high school, if they ran into any kind of problem, whether it be social or academic, and most of them in my case, in my research were academic, what they did was they turned it into a problem. And because they had heightened awareness of their problem solving and critical thinking skills, they were able to take any kind of deficiency or any kind of issue that they experienced in college, and they used all their problem solving skills to address them.
PBL timeout.
Wow, this sounds a lot like what we heard from Eli in our last episode. It seems like academically, students leave high school with similar sets of knowledge, particularly when it comes to the content. However, there seems to be this secondary set of skills that students coming from a PBL environment leave with that give them a slight edge in college.
Yeah, here we see another connection to both employability and 21st century skills. Problem solving is such an integral part of PBL, and here we see it translating into life after high school. Students who are used to solving complex, authentic problems in school will certainly be able to tackle complex, authentic problems outside of school. Even if they don't immediately see a solution, they were provided with the scaffolding to attack the problem with a clear framework.
And they came out of it positive. So that was kind of the interesting. So the questions I have is what part could we do to ensure that any of those study skills or whatnot can be addressed in high school while we still have time with them?
You've mentioned a couple areas where the students who are coming from a PBL environment are thriving. Are there any other differences you see between the students that have attended a PBL school or that come from a traditional school in the college environment, whether that comes from your research or from your experience as a professor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very, like, very visible, very evident to me that these students thrive in collaborative assignments. If I ask them to work together, they're the ones that take initiative. They can think critically. A lot of in my instruction, I give them a lot of student voice and choice, a lot of opportunities for them to make their own decisions. Because democracy in the classroom is and pragmatism is a huge component of PBL. And what I notice is some students like thrive in that environment. Some students are still kind of in the drill and kill mentality where they just need to memorize something and spit it back, recall essentially. They get really uncomfortable when I give them choices, give them an opportunity to make a choice. They don't want to be given that responsibility. They just want to, you know, they just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. They get uncomfortable when you give them different options because they're not sure about how to go upon solving something that's slightly more complex and something that's very explicit. So that's probably the biggest difference that I see is they're uncomfortable when they have the opportunity to think outside the box or come up with problems or solutions for those problems. Because I'll ask them to, like, create a problem using this content and then share it with your neighbor and then, you know, present it really quick and formally. They get nervous about what kind of problem should I write versus me just telling them to solve a problem. So I see that that's one of the biggest differences is they get really intimidated when you offer them the opportunity for them to solve problems and demonstrate choice because that's how I want them to assess and think about the knowledge and the content that we're trying to produce.
So you have a unique perspective because you've been a teacher in a PBL classroom, so you've kind of had to start that process while you were doing your teacher training. And now as a professor in the education department, you're also working with teachers as they're starting their own classrooms. So for someone who's thinking about getting started in a PBL classroom or trying to start PBL in their classroom, where do you think they should focus their attention in terms of getting started and what things should they do early on that might help them be successful?
Well, it always helps to be creative. But I find when teachers get really excited and want to be creative, they forget about the standards and the requirements that we have as teachers to, you know, the obligations we have to teach our standards and the obligations we have to assessments and whatnot. So regardless of whether it's PBL or, you know, culturally responsive teaching with PBL or anything kind of really innovative, I always say start with the standards.
PBL timeout.
This is huge. We cannot stress this enough. In one of our next episodes, we'll dive a bit more into the planning process of PBL, but for right now, if there is one thing we want to stress, it's that your project should be rooted heavily in your standards.
One of the biggest myths about PBL is that projects are not always standards-based, and this is simply not true. High-quality PBL is standards-based and rigorous. As Andrea said, we'll take a close look at how you go about connecting the projects to your standards in our next episode, so be sure to tune in.
Start with the standards first, and then start the creativity, the creative process. Oftentimes I see people, they find some great, like, cool, authentic project that they can do outside that, you know, there's something happening in the community or something happening at a national level at a, like a contest or something. And what they do is they take this, you know, this great idea that's external that they want to make authentic in the classroom, and then they force the standards into that process and then try to then squeeze the PBL process out of it. So I would go backwards. I would start with the standards and then begin the creative process, and then align it to the PBL process as well, because we're obligated to the standards and our students. And if we begin to force the standards into some sort of fun project that we find in the community, you get the PBL process, which is so important, gets lost in it. And then what you're, you know, your product, your whole lesson or whole unit, your whole project comes out very messy, and it becomes hard to defend. Let's say your principal wants to, and this is like the me speaking to, you know, pre-service teachers. Let's say your principal wants to know more about your project, and they ask you, like, how does this meet the standards? That becomes a tougher conversation if you don't begin with them first. So within the PBL design process, it's super important and first and foremost to ensure that you're meeting the expectations of your school and your students and whatever assessments that exist. And it's very possible to do all those, but I think you always have to start with the standards. Never lose sight of the standards and then begin the process versus the other way around where it becomes messy, I've seen.
Some excellent professional advice there from Dr. Martinez. We certainly have a responsibility to ensure that learning is happening in our classrooms every day. As we look to wrap this interview up, Dr. Martinez, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think our listeners might benefit from?
Probably preaching to the choir, but, you know, PBL is really the wave of the future, not to, like, that's a line from Hidden Figures. It's, you know, it's the wave of the future. But, no, I really think that, you know, a lot of the, if you look at mission statements, if you look at from companies, if you look at mission statements from schools, a lot of them emphasize a lot of the same principles that come out of PBL, you know, 21st century learning, collaborative work, able to communicate effectively, all these goals that companies and colleges have, you know, for their students, a lot of them are reflected in PBL and PBL instruction. So I really believe that a lot of these principles and processes that happen in PBL really are going to be at the forefront, and our students are going to be an advantage. And, you know, as a researcher, you know, one of the questions from working at New Tech schools that came up a lot and PBL schools that come up a lot is, you know, parents and community members, you know, they ask about PBL, hey, like, is my son or daughter going to be ready for college when they graduate from, you know, one of your schools? And that's a valid concern. You know, it's new way to look at schooling. Not really, but it is in some communities, and they are concerned. And I usually assuage them by telling them, hey, you know, college readiness is a problem. You don't have to go far. You go to your local community college, and even at that level, there's concern about college readiness. Most of the research and most of the data that exists about students not being college ready isn't reflective of PBL schools. The massive amounts of data that reflect lack of college readiness comes from traditional schools. So usually I just tell parents, hey, I'd be as concerned to send my kid to a traditional school as I would a school that does PBL, because if you look at everything that's out there, you know, there's an issue of college readiness that originates through traditional means of instruction. I'm not saying that, you know, that they're not ready, because there's certainly some teachers there's a lot of traditional strategies that are still used at the post-secondary level, I'd say more than anything. But I think that's a valid concern for parents. But, you know, most of the, you know, all the data, for the most part, except a little bit that I do and other people in this community, we really look at college readiness from a different perspective.
Thank you, Dr. Martinez, for being with us today and for sharing your expertise. We love having you on.
If any of your viewers want to, or listeners, I should say, want to contact me, I'm available at jmartinez@franklincollege.edu.
Well, there we have it. Another great episode of the PBL Playbook. These past two episodes have allowed us to revisit some of the elements that make PBL successful. Each person we interviewed reminded us of the importance of creating a learning environment centered on standards-based, collaborative problems based on authentic community needs.
As we're winding down the school year and getting ready to put another great PBL season in the books, it's time to do some serious reflection. What projects work great? What projects need some serious revision?
If you're a PBL rookie, we challenge you to pick a set of standards that you feel you can craft a truly authentic project around and start planning it today. Dream big. Get community partners involved. Make this memorable.
For our PBL veterans, it won't be long before the rookies are fighting for your starting spot. So we want you to think about a project that you've used or recycled. What would it look like if you completely overhauled that project?
Sounds uncomfortable, doesn't it? That's what we want. True growth doesn't often happen without some growing pains. Take a responsible risk and turn that project into something bigger and better. Shock your principal and find a way to inspire your students to greatness.
We'd love to hear about your project ideas, so don't forget to follow us at MissB103, at AskGeebs, AskGiebs, or you can tweet at MagnifyLearning and use the hashtag PBLPlaybook. If Twitter isn't your thing, you can email the podcast at PBLPlaybook@magnifylearningin.org. We're in the midst of planning our next episodes, so if you have topics you'd love to hear us talk about or just any feedback for us, please send it our way. We want to make this the podcast for you.
And with that, we say, ready, break!